What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode eight of our Game of the Year 2020 Awards Showcase Spectacular here at Rocket Punch. I am Cameron. Seth is with me, as always, here, as he's been throughout this entire discussion, deliberation, conversations. It's time. We're getting ever so closer to the fabled Game of the Year. But first, we've got to talk about the moments that brought us to tears or frustrated us here. Episode 8 here, guys, is Best Moment. That is what we're going to be talking about. I'm expecting great conversations out of this, Seth. I really am.
I have to say that I have my three, you know, my runners-up and my winner, but then I also have quite a selection of honorable mentions as well. So this will be a chunky category, as we say.
Let's get through the rigmarole so we can get right through it, guys. If you're jumping in, this is episode 8. If you have not heard the other 7 episodes, go listen to them before you come over to episode 8. This is 8 of our 10-part series here for Game of the Year. Of course, if you, for some reason, you missed part of those episodes, we're streaming these in batches every Sunday throughout January. You can also find videos of this on VOD over at youtube.com/RocketPunchGo. Or you can simply go onto your podcast service of choice and search for the Rocket Punch Show. It'll be in that feed right there for you to listen to. As we've talked about throughout this entire series here, Seth and I each have 2 runners-up and a winner that we have for each of our 10 categories we're going to be discussing and talking about as well. And also, a quick shout-out as well, don't forget to vote in the People's Choice polls. Go over to at Rocket Punch Go or at Darth Turner. Check out our tweets and find the Game of the Year form that you can fill out to talk and let us know what your favorite moments and games and things were from 2020. I'm excited to read about those on the 24th when we get to our Game of the Year stream proper.
No, I will ask you, please use real answers only. Don't do like I did for the test survey and in the additional comments section, put the entirety of the lyrics to, I believe it was Bat Out of Hell by Meatloaf.
I think you're right. I have no idea. Okay. I just saw it and I was like, I'm going to read those later.
It's either Bat Out of Hell or I Would Do Anything for Love, but I can't, but I won't do that. Both fantastic Meatloaf songs. Also not what you need to be putting in the additional comments field. For please, that survey.
But please let us know what you guys thought about 2020 and kind of what your favorite things were from the past year. But we're going to get right rolling here because we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about here. This episode, again, as I said at the top, guys, is for Best Moment. This is for the moment in gaming that was a favorite and memorable point for us through the year. It pretty much says itself. Before we get rolling, though, I am going to make this caveat. We really haven't had to worry about it through our categories. And I would probably guess other than maybe Game of the Year, we probably won't have to worry about it in any of the other episodes. But for this specific point, Best Moment is probably going to reference a lot of games that specific moments within those games that probably don't come at the beginning of those games, if you catch my drift. And so at the top here, I'm going to give a spoiler warning as we go through our runners-up and our winners and probably our honorable mentions. Seth, if you wouldn't mind, let's go ahead and very clearly state spoiler warning if we're going to talk about any of those or if that moment could be spoilers in any way. What I'm also going to do is for video viewers as well, if you're watching this via video, I'm going to adjust the timestamps. I'm going to put spoiler in the timestamps if that discussion does include some spoilers. I'm also going to, in the visual video, put a spoiler tag right at the bottom here. It'll be a big thing that says spoiler if we're discussing spoiler stuff. So if it's something where you want to mute the conversation until we're done to the next part, you can wait simply until that spoiler tag is removed, and then you'll know that you're out of spoiler territory for that particular game or event. Have you. So hopefully that helps you guys out. Because I really think, and it's unfortunate because we always have moments like these. I don't think it'll be a spoiler since Best Story was in years prior. But I think some of these moments are still going to have some spoiler-rich discussions that we're going to have, and it sucks for both of us because we have to wade through this foolishness. It could potentially ruin games for us. But that's why we do it. It's for you.
While we're here.
You went last time, Seth, if I'm not mistaken, so I think it's my turn, right?
You're right. You are up first, my friend.
Okay. Get my water here. All right. I will have to say that, but even getting off this category for best moment, this was almost the easiest category I've had in making picks. Okay. Out of all 10. Or all 9. I won't say game of the year yet because we haven't picked those yet. But one of my runners up for best moment is social media plus Animal Crossing plus Doom Eternal. You know what I'm talking about. For people who were, you know, removed from it before, like, coincidentally, let me double check the date on that. What ended up happening was that Doom Eternal got delayed, and then I think they were trying to come out in 2019, but they got delayed to 2020. They basically ended up getting pushed like right next to Animal Crossing New Horizons. If I'm not mistaken, it was the exact same day. Yes, it was. They both came out on March 20th of this year. And after the dates got pushed and they lined up right, basically, and I love to see stuff like this, the community people who are running the Animal Crossing campaign and the Doom Eternal campaign basically just had fun,
yep,
like with each other and talking back with each other, like really pumping each other up in a very positive way. Like, oh, dude, you know, Isabel can't wait to get her copy of Doom Eternal, and like the Doom guy can't wait to get his copy of Animal Crossing. And from this kind of I put collaboration in quotes because it wasn't really official, kind of like from a social media thing. The gaming community took off with it, and I remember seeing memes and video clips and all sorts of stuff about like Isabel in the Doom universe and Doom Guy in Animal Crossing. And like I remember the videos of like Doom Guy and Isabel going to GameStop, and Isabel's like reaching over the counter, is like, I want Doom Eternal, and like a copy of Doom Eternal, and like Doom Guy's like, yeah, Animal Crossing, and playing on a Switch.
He like grabs it with his fingers, like it looks like the Shaquille O'Neal water bottle, like.
And I loved that whole moment, and like seeing these two very different brands kind of come together, knowing they were on the launching on the same day, and really pumping each other up because these were hotly anticipated games for 2020, and seeing them kind of lift each other up and kind of have both of them succeed. And doing that, and also really the community really giving a positivity to that, that was really a bright light in 2020, as far as talking a lot about games and whatnot. And it was really fun. It was really cool to see. And that's really it. That's one of my smaller ones, but yeah, that's my runner up for best moment.
That's a good pick.
That whole social interaction with Doom and Animal Crossing.
Yeah, we forget people were clamoring for Animal Crossing to come out because of the way the pandemic was going, right? That was right when the lockdown started and people were really starting to feel it. And so, yeah, having that camaraderie was
really cool. Like it stoked the fire. It was like, man, we can't wait. And honestly, what was really cool about it was that it got, I think, a lot of Animal Crossing fans to check out Doom and a lot of Doom people to check out Animal Crossing. I remember that a friend of the show and fellow streamer, Arlenia, she's an Animal Crossing streamer. And, like, we played with each other. Like, we kind of helped each other out. Like, she was playing Animal Crossing and, like, I was playing Doom. And we were, like, cross-promoing each. And it was really great. It's something awesome.
That sounds good. Very nice pick. Very nice pick. Time for me?
Yes, it is time for you.
All right. So my first runner up for best moment is, Cameron, you mentioned earlier in one of our earlier episodes, you were wondering if I would mention this game. This was the exact time and place that I wanted to mention this game. And it is entering the portal to Zen in Black Mesa. So,
okay, all right.
Black Mesa, for those that don't know, was originally a mod that came out shortly after, or started work shortly after Half-Life Source came out. The creator was kind of unhappy with the way that Half-Life Source looked. It looked like original Half-Life. And he said, you know what? I'm going to make Half-Life look like Half-Life 2. So he made it as a mod. Long story short, it went through about a 12-year development process. Finally came out this year. It has been given the blessings of Valve. It is its own standalone game, but it came out, 1.0 version came out this year. And one of the things that took the longest to make in its development process was Zen. It spent about 5 years building just as for those that don't know, Zen is the alien world you kind of go to, and I guess minor spoilers for Half-Life, but also it's fucking Half-Life.
We're not going to put a spoiler warning on Half-Life. Look, Half-Life it's fucking a decade plus old. I'm not going to.
It's a decade old. So yeah. Anyway, so the aliens, kind of the alien dimension you go to at the end of Half-Life. Many people criticize that portion in the original game as being where a lot of the fun drips off. It's kind of got that idea of like their ideas were bigger than the tech could handle at the time. So like you go through this portal and then all of a sudden it's like poopy brown walls are all the textures, right? And there's all these just like zany shapes and you can't really tell that they're cool because it just looks like weird poopy polygons and like bunch of browns and bunch of greens and it just doesn't look good. And there's like weird alien stuff.
Yeah.
And so for a lot of people, they say the original Half-Life is a masterpiece, but once you get to Zen, it gets a little weird and it gets a little not as good as when you're in, you know, the actual Black Mesa facility. So the reason it took them so long to do Zen is because we're going to do Zen justice. We are going to literally recreate that entire back half of the game. Not back half. I'd probably say like back quarter of the game to make it unique and fun and really update it to what you would expect it to look like. And to give a little bit of context, like you go to this, you know, you go to the Lambda facility and the scientists are like, we're working on a portal to open up to Zen. If you can go through this portal and somehow find a way to close the portal from that side, then it will keep these aliens from like coming through the portal, you know, into our world.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's kind of a mission, right? So you go through this portal and dude, when you step out, it looks like something out of it honestly looks like something out of like Avatar, the movie, not the bad movie.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's the Airbender, but like the original Avatar. It's like this crazy space interdimensional forest. The skybox is very like Destiny. It's like gorgeous artwork. It's the lighting is phenomenal. They rebuilt the entire lighting engine just for Zen because their justification was light would work differently in another dimension. And so the way that light, you know, there's all these like weird like plants that grow off the walls and stuff, and each one's a light source. Like it is amazing what they did with Zen. They updated just about every single encounter, every single puzzle, because the game has a source engine running the physics engine. So like you're able to do physics puzzles, play with momentum, things like that. So Black Mesa in and of itself is a masterpiece recreation of Half-Life, but taking the portal to Zen really like that is the, even though it's like the last 5 hours of the game, it's like bright white light. And then you come out of that and you get this, honestly, you get the same feeling you got when you like came out of the cave in Skyrim from the very beginning. Remember? And you like walk out of the cave as you
never
escape
played
the,
Skyrim. Come on, man.
You get out of here, dude. Are you serious?
We've had this conversation multiple times and I've talked to multiple
people.
Keep walking
away because it's traumatic.
I've never ever touched Skyrim, and maybe that's a conversation we need to have for a Rocket Punch Show episode, but I've never touched Skyrim, period.
We're going to put a large pin in that, like a comically large.
The only thing I know about Skyrim is that at the start, you wake up in a cart, and the dude's like, oh, you're awake, and that's all I know. Yes. And the dragon comes and burns like the town down, and you find out you're the dope
kid. So the dragon comes, burns the town down, you go into a cave to get out of the town, and then you come out of the cave, and it's honestly, here's a better example. Maybe not, because it's the same company. But exiting the vault in Fallout. Did you do that?
I did get that far in Fallout 4.
Okay, I was about to say, I'm disconnecting this call. If we're done with Game of the Year.
I did at least get that far in Fallout 4, yes.
Yeah, but it's that idea of like it's opening up this whole new vista for you, right? And when you take that portal into Zan, you just see all these crazy, you know, you wake up, you're on this teleporter pad. Of course, it's broken because you just used it, right? And so next to you is a dead scientist with a shotgun. Or sorry, your crowbar is there. And so you like pick up your crowbar and you look around and it's just like flying alien squids. And it's very like Lovecraftian and that cosmic tone, right? Like not the weird Cthulhu side, but the more of the cosmic side. And man, they really nailed what Zen should have been, right? Like the tech just wasn't there for Zen back in the day. And they really did a great job of making Zen unique and cool. And it's a game that nobody's really talking about. And that is just such a great moment, finally giving life to Zen in a way that I don't think it ever got. Like most people, I would tell you to stop playing the original Half-Life after you go through the portal.
Yeah.
But the end of the
really?
Game,
you actually just like, just stop, just quit.
No, it gets very difficult. It gets very boring. It's kind of like that Resident Evil thing where it's like it's very combat focused, and they just didn't have a lot of stuff to play with back then, right? But they added the Source Engine.
Yeah,
they added all new art and lighting. They added new like physics and gravity effects. So like when you're in Zen, you're using the jump pad to like propel yourself, and you're literally like kind of flying. In a real cool way. So like you'll see a platform that's like half a mile away, but you can get there. You could just like run and jump and use the booster pack to get over there. So it's really cool. But that is my first runner up. Taking the portal to Zen in Black Mesa. Super duper fun for best moment in 2020.
It's a good pick there. That's very descriptive. Okay. Where's my phone at? It's my turn. Other best moment. So my other runner up, I have to I am going to, before I even start talking, I'm putting a spoiler tag on this right now. If you had spoiler tag for The Last of Us Part 2, boop, putting that right here, right there.
Yep.
Because my other runner up for this category is, I'm just going to simply title it Switcheroo for The Last of Us Part 2. And I think, well, Seth, I know you know what I'm talking about. It is this, hey, guess what? You are playing this awesome game, Last of Us Part 2. You know, you're really excited about it. You play in it, you jump through it, you go through Ellie's story, and you get to this very huge, like, climax point. People are getting shot. You're like, what the fuck's going on? Fade to black. And then you play as this other character. And you're like, okay, this isn't Ellie. Okay, we must be doing some flashback thing to kind of help extenuate like what we're talking about with the kind of story beats that Ellie ran into. And you start playing with this character, you find out it's her name's Abby, and seeing these stories. And then, oh, okay, you start playing this moment. Okay, you clearly see that she is tied to the kind of tail end of The Last of Us Part 1 with Joel getting Ellie to the hospital, and then Joel subsequently checking her out of the hospital. If you catch my drift, if you know what I'm talking about. And
Express checkout. Express checkout.
There we go. And kind of seeing her story and how it ties in with Ellie. And then it kind of fades out. And you're like, cool, that was, interesting flashback, fleshing more of the story out. But then you're like, no, wait, hold on a second. I'm still playing as Abby. What's going on here? And I remember when I started realizing that, wait, this isn't a flashback. We are now playing as Abby after all that shit that went down.
Yep.
Like they basically said, we're taking this high point. Now we're going to flip it around. And now you get to play the other side. And I was, I was very excited. And I wasn't going to look at these anyway, but I was very excited. I did not look at the leaks for The Last of Us 2, because it would have sucked if this has gotten ruined for me. But that fact where I no idea, that feeling I got when I like I'm playing as Abby and I'm like, oh wait, I am playing as Abby, and you basically play the story from Abby leading up to that moment where, I guess I did say spoilers in this conversation. So that that point where Abby starts shooting people in the theater, like I'm playing as Abby's side and I'm seeing that other side of the story. And that's one of the things I really got to praise, praise, thank, whatever, Naughty Dog for. And it really, it was one of those things that you really didn't see in the first Last of Us. But really, I think it kind of added to how hard this game was overall. Like, not just by difficulty, but just, like, it sits on your soul. Like, the fact of, like, you beginning to question, like, you know, dude, go Ellie, go. Kick their ass. Da-da-da-da. They did this, they did that. But then seeing that other side, and you're like, fuck. I feel bad for Abby now.
No, no, no. You say, like, fuck. I'm the villain. Me, the player, is the villain because 10 hours ago I was saying, yeah, get him, get him, get him. And now you found out you're the villain.
And having, like, having to play through that into that game and see all the stuff that gets up to now Abby's, you know, viewpoint of seeing Ellie and everybody at the theater. And then the icing on the top of this whole switcheroo is the boss fight where you are Abby and you have to fight Ellie.
Yep.
That, I was like, oh God, we're really going to do this. And it was like, I remember having that fight and you're it's like, push the button and you've got like, Abby's on top of Ellie about to throw the knife down. I'm like, fuck, I don't want to do this. I love Ellie, but I got to get through the game. And I'm conflicted. Mm-hmm. Oh God.
Yep.
It was just, Naughty Dog played with my emotions in a lot of different ways and just up and down and up and down that game. Like, that was one of the big differentiating factors. Like, having that switcheroo and having that moment that really, I think, elevated that story even more to the fact that, you know, when we play games a lot, we only see that one side, whether good or bad. And kind of seeing those same or similar scenarios from that other side, from the other side of the coin. You know, the two sides of the same coin, and seeing how
nice
their stories kind of were the same. They hit the similar points, but also how they differed, and kind of seeing, especially from Abby's point of view, like some of the same story notes that Ellie and Joel had in the first one kind of echo with her and Lev in this one.
Yeah.
And it was really, it was very powerful. It was very different. And I loved every minute of it. And it was, I was totally shocked by it completely. Was not expecting this at all. And it really threw me for a loop. I could pick specific moments because there are a lot of these moments, even after everything I talked about, that's still not the end of the game. funny enough, but I think I could pick a lot of best moments from this game, but I think that was my biggest one because I think that was like the first big shocker that just like, wait, what's happening? And the, like, you know, and how much more this game has to it and the story the game is trying to tell and how they told it from the view we know and then the view we don't know or that we really don't want to know in some aspects because it makes it harder for us to do the things we have to do in that world. So that is why the switcheroo in The Last of Us Part Two is my other runner-up for best moment.
Very nice. It's almost like there's a life lesson there. Like, if you learn to empathize and understand where other people come from, that most of the time your perception is wrong. But
it doesn't necessarily mean that it's wrong. I think it just means that it's, you really have to think about it. And it's from both sides, you know. Yes. Yeah,
nothing is as it seems.
Nothing is as clear cut as it seems. It's not all black and white. There's always a lot of gray more than anything. So that's it.
Very nice. Great pick. Great pick. So my next runner up for best moment is going to be, all right, Cameron, I gotta get you in a theater of the mind moment here, right?
Okay.
So,
closing my eyes,
you are on a team of investigators.
Okay.
Your job is to go in and help identify what a ghost, what type of ghost is inside of this home, right? And so you're going to get all this gear. You're going to set it all up in the house. And you know a little bit about what this ghost is doing. So you find out, you know, its name is Hillary Johnson, right? So you go in there and you're like, Hillary Johnson, where are you? Where are you at? Come on out. Come on, Hillary. And then you get a little angry because you're not getting anything. So you're like, come on out, you piece of shit. Show me where you're at. And then all of a sudden, the lights start to flicker. The doors are all locked. And you just hear the... like in your ear right behind you. And immediately, you are just like... Ah! And you like throw your headset off. If you're playing in VR, good luck. You're dead. You're done. Flatline. I am, of course, talking about your first paranormal encounter in Phasmophobia as my next runner-up for best moment in 2020. I gotta tell you, Cameron, it is. I've sung the praises of Phasmophobia. I'm so glad that it, you know, it had its time in the number or in the top 10 of Steam. So many streamers were getting into it. So many people were getting into it. I cannot express to you how awesome this game is.
Yeah.
But when you have that. You hear about it, right? You hear people talking about it on stream. You maybe watch a couple funny instances. But when you are wearing the headset and playing that game, and then you most likely said something real dumb that you shouldn't have said to the ghost. And so the ghost shows up for you and just scares your pants off. It is a feeling that if you hate scary things, you're obviously going to bounce. You're going to be like, nah, fuck this shit. I'm out. Like, you're done. But if you get a thrill from that, it keeps you coming back for more. And I remember one of my favorite moments, and I'm so glad that my fiance like captured this. But we were playing on School, which is a rather large map.
Yes, it is.
One of the larger maps. And the ghost had appeared in one of the classrooms. So I was in there, and we knew the ghost preferred to show itself to people who were alone. So basically, it was just me in the classroom. My other friend, not you, Cameron, my other friend Cameron was there with me as well. So he was a little further down the hall, kind of keeping an ear out for me, basically waiting to see if I died, right, so he could go get my stuff. And, of course, you know, I'm, like, trying to summon him. I'm saying his name. Be like... Come out, you piece of shit. Show yourself. Like, I'm here. Come get me. And then, of course.
Come on, do it. Kill me.
Lights, yeah, basically, do it. Kill me. Do it now. And so the lights start to flicker. And it's like an old farmer dude. Like, that's the skin that his body. And so he's like, and he's got like a sickle in his hand. And he's like walking toward me. And I start running. And so what my fiance was able to capture was the perspective from her point of view. And so all it is you see my flashlight turn the corner at the end of the school. And remember, the game uses proximity voice chat.
Yep.
So all you hear is just this, run, run, help, help, as I'm getting closer. And you see my friend Cameron like running because he was waiting for me. So all he sees is me running toward him screaming bloody murder. So he starts running the opposite way, screaming bloody murder. I'm telling him to come back because I need a friend to be with me. The ghost is right behind me like in my ear. And I was, listen, that was one of my favorite moments this year. I had to encapsulate it as like your first encounter because that was like my first major big encounter. But man. What a game. I really like this moment also because everyone's going to have a paranormal encounter in that game, but everyone's is going to be unique, right? It's going to be different. And I think that's the magic of this kind of game where it's everybody has that different mistake they made, the thing they said that upset the ghost, and it just really made that a great runner-up for best moment of 2020.
What's funny is you're reminding me of my first moment when we first started playing. And we were in, I think, the cabin, and we were we couldn't find the ghost, and we're like, we're leaving. I'm like, you know, Hillary Johnson, come out, you asshole, whatever. And I say that right as we're walking out the door, and like, as soon as I say that, you asshole, as I'm reaching for the door closes and locks, and I'm like, oh, fuck. Oh, no, open the door. And I can run upstairs and like hide in the corner. I'm like, oh, God, it's coming for me.
Yep. Before you do. No.
It was so much fun. I'm glad you put a moment like that on here. That yes, well done. Well done.
It's very good. I can't wait for that game. I can't wait to see where that game is when it comes out of early access. I'm usually very not into early access games on this list, but in particular, this game was a game I played this year, and man, that was probably one of the top moments of this. I mean, it is. It's why it's in my runner-up list. Like, it was one of my top moments for this year. So,
All right.
It's time.
It is time.
Give me the big one.
The winners, my winner for big best bully. Moment. I picked a moment in The Last of Us Part 2, right? So it couldn't possibly be another moment in The Last of Us Part 2, right?
Listen, well, I have a Last of Us Part 2 section of my runners-ups, or my honorable mentions. So
let me tell you that it most certainly cannot. It's not The Last of Us Part 2. Okay. I could pick a lot of moments from that, but it's not my winner. I am having to put another spoiler tag on this as well. So spoilers for the Final Fantasy VII Remake. Because my
Are you
going
to tell me the ending so I don't have to play it?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I'm 100% going to do that. My winner for best moment is... I'm going to title it 7 Seconds Until the End for Final Fantasy VII Remake. This game has been so much fun. I really think that Square Enix went above and beyond in making a remake to a game as pivotal and as close to people's hearts as Final Fantasy VII is from their series. Mm-hmm. And we're going to remake it. If people are excited, then people are like, ooh, wait a second. Is that really a good idea? Like, you're messing with one of the best RPGs of all time. Yep. Is that going to translate well? And I was very pleasantly surprised to say that it did. But the ending to this game, I am, as I said, spoiler warning. So you've not played any of this game. I don't think you're going to play this game anytime soon, Seth.
I mean, I played up to the honeybee.
Oh, you got pretty far in then. Okay.
Yeah, I think I just kind of ran out of steam, and then that was around the time when people's things about the ending started to come out, and I was like, oh, well, if this game ends on a bleh, then I don't really want to. But please sell me on this ending.
So one of the kickers throughout the game, and it's very interesting how they did this, is that, you know, you see Sephiroth pop out throughout the game in Cloud's subconscious. He pops up. And what's interesting about that for people who have not played Final Fantasy VII is that Sephiroth, there were places that Sephiroth was showing up in that he wasn't, like, you did not know. You didn't see him in there. The scene where you're in the, right after the bombing and you're going through the city.
Yeah.
And like, it's on fire and Sephiroth is there. That never happens in the first game.
Oh,
like, you literally, like, you don't see Sephiroth. Really, like, as you go further through the game, there's even points where, like, you haven't gotten this far, but in the lab, one of the characters in the lab starts to talk about things about Cloud and about the party that you're not supposed to know about yet. You don't learn until, like, disc 2 of 3.
Oh, okay.
And it's funny because they know, it's like, you know, they start talking and someone's like, oh, you know what? We're not, you know, I can't talk about that just yet. Okay. And you really find out from this story that the ghosts and stuff, I know you know about those, Seth, that pop around. You start, basically the story is that these ghosts are like somehow trying to keep the wheels of fate in line. And basically, keep it in a simple mind, the ghosts are there to keep the story of Final Fantasy VII the same as it is right now, with how the original was released and how all the the story beats from all the discs happened up. So, you know, when, you know, all the stuff that happened in the Honey Bee Inn, all that stuff, like, the ghosts are there to keep that story in line. And this, like, image and vision of Sephiroth is kind of popping up to almost disrupt that. And there's this, some weird stuff that even I'm not sure I fully understand, but, like, my interpretation of it is, like, the thought is somehow Sephiroth, the one that you see, the Sephiroth that you see, because spoilers for Final Fantasy VII, the reason you're not supposed to see Sephiroth that early is because Sephiroth isn't really alive at that time. That's why it was always weird, like, what the hell is Sephiroth doing here? What the fuck's going on? And so I think one of the understandings is that this Sephiroth is maybe from some other timeline that is basically maybe a timeline where he got his ass kicked and he's trying to come into this timeline to affect and change the story and the narrative. Some main characters end up dying that don't die in the original game.
Did they Avengers Endgame this?
Sort of, no. Like, almost almost in a reverse way. So what ends up happening is that, I'm taking a long time to get to my moment here, but you guys have to deal with it. You end up, like, the ghosts and whatnot are trying to keep you on the wheels of fate. And then Sephiroth is trying to disrupt that and cause other problems. And what ends up happening is you end up, I know, Seth, you've probably at least seen online the infamous highway chase where Cloud is on the motorcycle and you're driving and you've got the rest of the party in a little car and you're driving trying to get out of town.
No, I have not seen that, but go ahead.
Okay, so that is the last part. The story ends, the original Final Fantasy story ends with you guys break out of Shinra and you rescue Aerith. And you got Cloud's on his motorcycle with his sword. And then everybody else is piled up into this like pickup truck. And you guys are driving down the highway and Shinra sending army soldiers after you to come capture you. And a boss fight happens here. And in the original Final Fantasy VII, what happens is that you guys basically get to the end of the road. The highway isn't fully completed. And it kind of is sitting on the edge of Midgar. Mm-hmm. And the boss comes up and you have to fight the boss. And after you fight the boss, you basically jump down part of the highway that's broken and you leave Shinra. And that's the end of Disc 1 for the original Final Fantasy VII. In this version, what happens is that you get to the end of the road, you defeat the boss on the road. And you get to the end of the road and it's still broken off, but then you kind of see these coalesces of fate show up as well. And you kind of find out and discover that you have to defeat, I'm trying to be somewhat vague so I don't get into the intricacies of the story, but you have to defeat this kind of visage of fate in order to proceed and try and change your fate and change, basically. You fight the ghosts. You go into this portal in this other dimension and you fight these ghosts that kind of coalesce into these big bosses. I'm not going to get into the details of the bosses, but it's pretty cool if you know the Final Fantasy VII lore, to basically change your fate. And as you're fighting, what's so awesome too, number one, of all these different points I'm going to talk about and why it's my winner, is that number one, as you're fighting, there are like these moments in the original Final Fantasy that the fates kind of flash at you. Like you'll get this moment where you kind of stun them a little bit and the huge boss pulls back. And then these little spirits start flowing through Cloud's mind. And all of a sudden it'll show some flashes of like the original Final Fantasy VII. Not like the pixelated version, but like basically a remaked version of these huge points and moments.
Oh, yeah.
In Final Fantasy VII, and one of those moments being you see a quick flash of Aerith floating in the water. And I know you know that moment at least.
I know that.
And among a bunch of other different moments, and like Cloud's like, what the hell's going on? And they're like, these are moments in our future that haven't happened yet. And they're showing us like this is the path, and like we have to, if we want to change those, we don't understand what they are, but we have to kill this and fight him in order to change what those are. And so you fight and battle this visage of fate. And when you defeat him, you learn that more or less that the Sephiroth, the different timeline Sephiroth, who we're assuming is from a different timeline, basically that was his play the whole time. He wanted you to defeat the visage of fate, because he knew that's what was going to kill him. Because if you followed that storyline path, then eventually that means that Sephiroth will die. He will be defeated. And so he wanted you to defeat them so that he could have a chance to win and succeed in his ultimate goal. And so in a moment, funny enough that I didn't even expect they were really going to do, and also because the fate fight was so awesome and epic and hard, Sephiroth pops up, kind of tells you, thank you for that. Now you freed me and I can do what I want. And then a platform shows up, he comes down, and then the camera zooms out and the battle screens pop up. I'm like, fuck me, I'm fighting Sephiroth in disc one of this fucking game. And there, so it's us versus Sephiroth in this weird, like, pseudo dimension, the same dimension we fought the fates in. And this is one of those battles, Seth, you've ever had, whether an RPG or first-person shooter or any fight, where you pull out every trick you can and you think of everything you need to do when you attack and pull back and attack and pull back, and you literally, it's like the final slash when you're like, literally everybody's at low health, you're about to die, and you're like, kill him, burn him, and he dies. That was the moment for me. Literally, it's like this much health, and I'm like, sowing some shit, I don't know, I'm running out of mana, take some pills, do whatever you have to do, and I finally killed him. And I was like, it was one of those, like, yes, I did it. And it's just like Sephiroth defeated. And I'm like, yeah. And it has this really awesome cutscene with all the characters that you have at the time. So it's Aeris, Spirit, Tifa, Red 13, and Cloud kind of fighting, doing the final little cutscene fight with Sephiroth. And they kind of, like, Cloud jumps up and does like a final slash on Sephiroth, and he just smiles. And all of a sudden their swords clash and you're taken through this portal. And Cloud and Sephiroth end up on this other portal. At the end of this portal, and you're basically in space, and you're on this, like, rocky, I don't want to say planet, but like this rocky plateau. And there's this, like, celestial body out in the sky. And, like, and Sephiroth kind of tells you, like, basically he's like, you know, Cloud, lend me your strength. Help me defy destiny. Join me. And, you know, he's looking at this, like, celestial body. He's like, you know, it's only a matter of time. It's not to Gaia yet, but it'll get there eventually. and he's like, you know, Cloud's like, what is this? And Sephiroth's like, this is the edge of creation. Stuff is very vague on purpose because they got to keep you hooked in so you can get to play the next two or three games. And so he's like, Cloud, join me, you know, and Cloud's like, no, I'll never join you. And so they fight. And the fight is very, other thing as well, for people, it's very much an homage to people who have played the original Final Fantasy VII. The final fight between Sephiroth and Cloud is in this crater, and it's in this black void. And it's Sephiroth and Cloud, and the game does these, like, it zooms in on both of you two as you're standing in your poses, and it, like, kind of flashes between Cloud and flashes between Sephiroth. It's really hard to explain, but they basically echo that same feeling as the camera zooms in on them both, and it's like Cloud in a stance and Sephiroth in a stance, and they fight each other. And it basically ends up with Cloud losing, and, like, he knocks the sword away. And then Sephiroth just comes up behind him and just basically tells him, 7 seconds till the end. You know, that might be enough time for you, maybe. What will you do with that time, I wonder? And then he disappears. And basically, you see Cloud standing out in this void with this celestial body on the edge of creation with the Buster Sword stuck in the ground. And then there's a bunch of other cutscenes I'm not going to go into. Story points in there, so I'll leave at least some of that stuff mysteriously for people.
You're making me want to go play this now.
I'm really good at that.
Keeping it vague enough where, like, I don't feel like it's ruined. Like, I still feel like I'll enjoy it, but, like, I really want to see this now because it sounds insane.
And I'm gonna tell you, go play the game. Like, it's so so many of the homages that they took from the original game, the scenes that popped up, and I'm like, oh, I know that scene. We were at this point. Yeah. Oh my God. I'm like, oh, there's Aeris. Like, and it's like they're the party talking throughout this fight, and you're like, you know, these are, you know, this is what will happen if we continue down our path. We have to defy fate and strike it down, and then to find out that Sephiroth, like, that was my plan the whole time. And basically, you fight Sephiroth, and then kind of what he talks about with Cloud and that 7 seconds till the end quote, which I'm always thinking, like, what the hell does that mean? 7 seconds till the end. And, like, what that can mean for the rest of the story, because what I loved all these moments, especially as a big Final Fantasy fan. And I think, like, the big exciting thing for me is that think about the title, Final Fantasy VII Remake. And we all knew it's going to be a remake of the game, right? And then after seeing and watching this ending, the thought was, like, a lot of people talked about it online, was like, think about the title again, Final Fantasy VII Remake. They're remaking Final Fantasy VII as far as you're remaking how the story goes.
That's cool.
And it really sets up a point where, like, the game ends. I know what Final Fantasy VII, I know exactly, like, that was the end of Disc 1. I know how Disc 2 starts. And, like, I know the rest of the story. This really puts into context, like, I have no idea what the next entry is going to, how it's going to start. I'm sure there's going to be some echoing points, but, like, I have no idea where the story is going to go now because they've supposedly changed fate by defeating it.
Yeah.
So
that's cool. I think that's very clever. I would love for more people to experiment with, like, the quantum realities and remakes where, like, you're remaking something, but it is an alternate timeline. Like, that's such a cool idea. I really want to go play that now. I feel like I dropped off that a little too early.
And it was, like you said, it's one of those things where, like, it's a remake. And they did such a good job of, like, hiding that in because I never saw any leaks or anything about it. But now after beating it, I'm like, damn, that was a good title. Like, that title has so many more meanings to what they're trying to do. And it really pumped me up. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm so excited, you know. I hear all these people like, man, they're just remaking the whole game. Like, can't tell you. They're kind of not, but it's really, really cool. I loved, as a Final Fantasy VII fan, I got chills the entire time, and that's why it is my winner for best moment. 100%.
Very nice.
This was the easiest pick. As soon as I saw best moment, like, know what's going up first.
I would never have guessed that you would have picked something from Final Fantasy VII Remake. You're not you don't strike me as the kind of guy who's into that game.
It's really weird, but I took a leap of faith.
Well, you're asking yourself, you said, Seth, you basically have already blown your load of the Half-Life thing, because that's the game that got me into gaming. You've blown your Phasmophobia card. What do you got left?
What do you have
left? And Cameron, my best moment of 2020, I have very specifically named the Metal Gear Solid 2 ass moment in The Last of Us Part 2, which you have already talked about. But I gotta tell you, part of... And for those that don't know, this is the character swap, so definitely we're going to talk about spoilers at this point. Sorry, I probably should have said that before saying the words character swap, but Cameron, I trust you to use your...
I will do my powers.
Your magical spoiler powers. So, character swap, Last of Us Part 2. I want you to know I almost put this game down when it came up. It's been well documented, but I'm going to document it again. The Last of Us Part 2 is my least favorite game of all time. I hated playing it, but I also loved it. I'll play it again. I never want to touch that game again. Completely cleansed myself, just like the first game. But yeah. Cameron, I got to tell you, that if it was not for the fact that, like, Metal Gear Solid 2 did that shit... It was that level of just, like, insanity. Like, I can't think of another time. Like, what you're talking about with the Final Fantasy remake, right? Blew your mind to see them do something so crazy and so off the wall, right? And with this, a game where Ellie's on the box, The story's about Ellie. Everything leading up to this point is about Ellie. You're in the theater. The people are shot. People are dead. Bodies on the ground. Blood in the sand. And then it cut to black. And to go over to become the enemy, to become Abby, I was like, I don't care. Like, I don't care about it. I was like, I don't care about her. I'm ready to kill her. Like, I'm ready to kill her. That's what I'm ready to do. And be done with this game, because I really wanted to finish this game. I really wanted to finish this game that never ended for Seth. But to at that point, I will say, then you go through this game a second time, and you see Abby's story in and of itself could have been its own game, right? Like, it could have been. It could have been like Miles Morales, where they made like an in-between game where you played only as Abby and it was just the story of Abby, right? And then the cliffhanger at the end was you're walking up to the theater and then that'd be the end. And then The Last of Us Part Two would have been Ellie's whole story up to the theater, right? Like, that's the. That would have been a possible way if Seth was an evil businessman and wanted to make two games out of one. But they didn't. They wanted to make one amazing game. So you go through this awesome story where you're following her a lot around the whole day, and you're kind of not really even interacting with, like, you don't really see what Ellie's been up to when you're playing as Abby until the very end. Like, you don't have a lot of crossover with her, but you do have crossover with things that Ellie's hearing about. You know, like, there's a guy who's attacking the camp. So, like, obviously you're hearing the radio chatter about the guy who's attacking the camp, because it's like, it's her camp, right? So, like, she's trying to, like, deal with that also. So there's a couple of cool crossover moments like that. But, man, to go as that is Big Dick Energy Video Game Edition, dude. That is, we're going to put you in another 12-hour funnel. That is, you are playing as the villain, and you are not necessarily getting any say about it. Like, sit down and watch. And like we, like you said before, going through this, you start to realize that, like, nope, all these people that you just spent the last 12 hours, like, loving to kill are actually great people, and they don't deserve that. Or maybe they kind of do, actually. You know, and that's the whole thing about this game. Is like, you're like, do they deserve it? Like, you really can't tell. But I have to just say, the boldness of that particular creative choice. You talked about games are art. Games are art. And that is, like, it had the energy of, like, a Banksy painting. Like that painting where it's, like 17 seconds into the auction, it, like, shreds itself. Yeah. It was that. It was like, you are in this moment, and then all of a sudden, you are yanked out of it and put into this other thing you don't want to be in, but you're told, sit down, shut up, and watch, and then you get through it, and you're like, oh my God, I'm so glad that they did that. So, you've already talked about this en masse. I'm done talking about it, but the Metal Gear Solid 2 ass moment in The Last of Us Part 2 is definitely the winner for my best moment of 2020. It was very difficult for me to find a best moment for that particular game, but I was like, man, as much as I love those other moments, and there's another moment that's actually at the top of my honorable mentions. When we get to that, I'm gonna need some time to talk about it, because it almost won this category, but I ended up putting it in honorable mentions for reasons. But anyway, character swap, Last of Us Part 2, fantastic move. What a game. What a game. I never want to play it again. I don't want to see a single frame of that game again.
Character swap, Last of Us Part 2 is Seth's winner for best moment, with the portal, entering the portal into Zen in Black Mesa, and First Contact in Phasmophobia as his runners up. My winner for best moment is 7 seconds until the end for Final Fantasy VII Remake, with the social interactions between Animal Crossing and Doom being a runner-up, along with the character swap in Last of Us Part 2.
Want you to know that 7 seconds to the end is technically could be a JoJo's reference.
Really?
Yes. Because remember, Cameron, everything is a JoJo's reference if you're creative enough. 7 seconds to the end.
You're not. I have not gotten far in JoJo's yet, but I'm assuming you're referring to the world and something with the time powers.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're right.
I got it. I'm on it. I'm slowly getting my inner stand or
Yep.
I can't remember what it was called.
No, you're right. They're stands.
Yes. Okay. Runner honorable mentions for best moment here. I'm going to run through mine somewhat quickly here because these were tied in the games here. The final fight in Spider-Man Miles Morales between the Tinkerer. I thought that was a really great fight. I thought it had a lot of emotional weight to it as well, kind of like with the threat of the city. In the people, kind of the people that you interact with, kind of in that moment, and the fact that they could be dying, and they're kind of all around that as well. I thought it was a really cool fight. I thought it was. I'm not going to say that. That's probably a false statement. But I thought it was another very great end of that game. Again, just wish I would love that game to have been longer than what already was. Another moment, getting a crown in Fall Guys. And I have a clip somewhere on Twitch, but finally, like, getting the crown and capturing it and getting number one, like, dude, that was so... That's always a hype moment, but I think my first time getting a crown that I was able to capture on a stream was really awesome. And then another... One of my final moments that I want to... Well, it's my third and final one for best moment is Grounded. In playing Grounded with you, Seth.
Oh,
specifically,
yeah.
One of my favorite clips of the spider.
Is it when the spider? Yeah, I was about to say it's the spider.
It's the spider.
That was a good one. That was a good night.
God,
that was a good game.
And just the watching that clip over and again is like, I'm gonna come help. And it's, you know, oh no, just me, like, we're going out and let's keep exploring, and then just in the camera, these big red eyes come out from the. And I'm like, whoop, nope. I'm like, beeline directly back into there. I am not going to deal with this. And you on the comms just going like, oh, nope. It got me. I'm dead.
Yep. Accept my fate. That was a good night. That was a fun night.
But those are my honorable mentions for best moment. Seth, what are some of yours?
Okay. I got a rapid fire here. But like I said, the first one here I'm going to have to talk about for a little bit.
Spoiler?
Not a spoiler.
Okay.
I will have some spoilers later on, but I will mark them as I get there. The number one honorable mention should have been in my list, but I couldn't quite put it in because I feel like kind of like the first paranormal encounter in Phasmophobia. This would have been where it went, but the Phasmophobia one spoke to me more. And not everyone gets to experience this, but that is getting away with it as the imposter in Among Us.
Ooh,
truly
okay,
euphoric.
Good point.
And it's very difficult to do this because you've got to be playing with a group of friends that you can deceive, right? And I think it's more likely to see this in like a Twitch clip or something, but it's definitely like the... I swear on my entire family's graves that I am not the... And then they are the... It's that level of people just bickering and that social, you know, the social engineering game like that is... Or social deception game, I think they're called. And then when you finally get down to it, right? One imposter left, two other people, and you manage to turn one of them against the other. And it is just... beautiful. It's magic, and it is when you and they put in their vote, and they're like, I've got it. I know who the imposter is, and they put it in, and then it says imposters win, and their heart just sinks. That is definitely a best moment. I was just saying, if you were lucky or privileged enough to have that moment, it was probably in the top of your gaming career.
I had. Played with my the first time that I played with my coworkers, and it was like 8 or 9 people, and we decided on one of the rounds to have one imposter, and it was me, and I got away with it, and people were so pissed they were like,
"That's good."
The fucking was Cameron. I was just laughing, like, and I played it so cool. They're like, "Dude, you know, I saw such and such. Like, this is what I think." And people were like, "You know what? Cameron's making some reasonable, like, thoughts and processes here. I'm going to vote for the other guy." And just the whole time, like, "It's not me. It's not me. Like, it's not me. I don't know." Like, and oh, it was sweet. I was like, "Yes,
you got him." Yeah, Among Us, man. I mean, lots of best moments, but of everything that you can do in that game, that is the best moment. So, next one I have is not necessarily in the game, in a game, but it is the PlayStation 5 reveal. That happened this year, if you remember.
Oh, wow, okay.
Revealing of that box in that final, because you remember that whole video was like they were showing off... I'm trying to remember the exact flow, but they were like showing off the games that were going to be coming out, right?
They showed all the games and the box got showed at the end. They had the like the room with all like the balls flowing around all coalesced.
We knew that it was going to be wild because of the DualSense controller, right? Like we had seen the DualSense. We knew it was, you know, white was probably going to be its predominant color. But I think most people were really expecting something along the lines of the PS4, right? Like it's the PS4 channeled that PS2 energy and that felt like the direction they were going to go. But then they went Tower of Sauron, Wayne Enterprise building, like totally different direction. And it just really shocked me at the time. Like I was like, dang, Sony's back at like, they're hungry again. Like they are out there. You know, I may say some of it's change for change's sake, but that's important in hardware. Like when you rely entirely on hardware manufacturing to be your primary profit driver, like sometimes you just got to change for change's sake to make people, I think gamers in particular, like the idea of something shiny and new, right? Like we love installing that new PC part or getting that new component or replacing that part. And so having something shiny and new makes it feel really interesting and cool. So I would say that was a great, like, honorable mention, very memorable. Following up to that, the next part here going to be a lot of spoiler tags for us here. So I'm going to go ahead and start right now with Last of Us Part 2. Spoilers.
Okay.
So be aware. The sniper fight in Last of Us Part 2. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
This is, and I'm a sucker for this. I was a sucker for this in Metal Gear Solid 5. I am a sucker for having to outsmart a sniper in a video game. It is such a cool, like it's, you can't build a game on it, but being a part of your game, it's awesome. So, you know, you're basically, it's kind of the same as Metal Gear Solid where you're like riding in or not riding in, but you're like walking in. And then all of a sudden you hear the sniper shot go off. Right. And you duck behind the car. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, slowly crawling from car to car to try and not get sniped. And the way that that fight plays out and the sniper is very smart and, you know, trying to make noise to attract zombies to you. And it was, I just remember it being a really tense moment and really enjoying that part. And then especially at the end, when you get to the sniper and you fight and you find out who that is and the way that that concludes, I thought that was just a really cool segment of that game and was really worthy of like a best moment call out. This one is a deep, deep, I would say, final cutscene of The Last of Us Part 2 spoilers. So be aware. But the final guitar segment in The Last of Us Part 2, and that is after I'm going to speak very directly here, after Ellie's had her fingers bit off,
yes,
she tries to play the guitar and she can't hit those chords anymore, right? I remember that it being such a powerful moment for me because it made me realize that the theme of this game is that like your consequences, you have to live with the consequences of your decisions, right? And for her, it is, she wanted revenge for that thing that was done to her, right? Because she loved Joel so much. And by doing that, she has kind of prevented herself, or that quest, not necessarily her final decision, but her quest resulted in her being unable to relive those memories the same, right? Like she can't, she's lost a part of herself in this journey, right? And even though she maybe made the right choice at the end, that didn't negate all the choices she made up to that point. And she has to live with those consequences, right?
Yeah.
Very impactful moment. Really great end to that series. Don't ever make a Last of Us Part 3. Don't ever. And I said this at the end of one, but like now, don't do it. Don't touch it. Don't touch it. Next one, not as deep in the game, but the museum segment. I want to shout that out as well. That was probably my personal favorite just because it had to do with space, like the big moment where you're in the capsule.
The Saturn V was in there. I was like, I live there. Saturn V was in there.
Yep, that was it. The museum segment was definitely one to remember. And the last one from a little later in the game, the horse ride sequence. If you remember this, at the end of Abby's arc, during the big battle, and you're riding the horse through the burning village.
Yes. Okay. Now I'm with you.
That.
Gotcha.
What a powerful, crazy action moment. Also, rip the horse. That horse got totally shafted in its life. But that I remember that moment just feeling like it felt like the end of a Halo game. Like when shit's just blowing up all around you and you're just trying to get the hell out of there. What a great and powerful moment. So all of those Last of Us Part 2 moments, I wanted to shout them out. Next one, I'm going to say it's a spoiler for Miles Morales, but it's very light, but it is at the end of the game. So I'm going to say the mural from Spider-Man Miles Morales. In particular, that final shot of the mural when you come back in to the open world. If you remember, you finished the game.
Yes.
And you come back into the open world, and there's a little tiny cutscene that takes place at the mural. And I thought that was a really cool moment and really encapsulated the what we were talking about with Miles Morales in our previous episode, where you really see New York has come around on Miles and accepting Miles. So that was really cool. Two more. I promise. I told you I had a long list. I wanted to shout out some stuff. So the next one is a spoiler for the end of Astro's Playroom. But it is the final boss of Astro's Playroom. Did you play that?
I still haven't played or beaten through that. Yeah, no.
Oh, okay. The final boss of, as a PlayStation fan, you will appreciate the final boss of Astro's Playroom. For those who have beat it, you know what it is. It is a deep cut from the PlayStation history. And Cameron, I think you'll smile real big when you get. It is perhaps the deepest cut that one could have for PlayStation, if I can tease it anymore.
God, okay.
It is probably
I have to play through this game now.
Absolute deepest cut that one could have from PlayStation history. Very, very awesome. This one, this is a Cyberpunk spoiler, but Cameron, I am going to do my best to dance around it to not ruin the end of the game for you. Okay. So I am going to say Cyberpunk secret ending. This ending is very easy to get, but you have to know how to do it. It's not like something you can accidentally do. The way I will tell it, there will be a scene toward the end of the game where you are hanging out on a rooftop and you're talking to a character, and the character tells you that you've got a decision to make, right? You can, if you want to get the secret ending, put your controller down for 5 minutes. Don't make a decision. You put the controller down and you wait 5 minutes. And then you will have a new option pop up that will let you get the secret ending. And the secret ending is impossible. It is impossible. And I'm not gonna ruin anything because I really want Cameron to enjoy this game.
Okay.
But part of the game's ending is figuring out how you're going to deal with a problem, right?
Yep.
This ending is the most banana bonkers, stupid, foolish way that you could handle this. And it actually lets you play it. So it's not like you just select it and then see a cutscene. You actually play through the stupid, dumb decision that you've made. And nobody has yet figured out if you can resolve it. Because it is so unbearably hard, no one has been able to do it yet. So I'm trying real hard to talk around it, but I wanted to let you know that when you get to the rooftop scene where you have to make a choice, wait five. It is five Earth minutes, five whole minutes. You have to wait for it to appear, but then it will appear. So just when you finish the game, reload if you want to check out the secret ending. It's pretty wild. And I can't wait for someone to figure out the throughput on it so that you can make... I don't know if there's like a secret ending, right? I just...
Okay.
There could be. Okay. That is my last one. Lots of moments.
Okay. Those a lot of great moments there.
Busy year.
And that is it, guys. That is it for episode 8 here of Game of the Year 2020. Best moment. We are going to switch gears and jump over to episode 9, the penultimate episode for our Game of the Year series, where we're going to be talking about our person of the year, which should be some interesting conversations as well. So guys, just hang tight. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back in just a minute.